WBSM presents Brian's Beat with Brian Thomas, streaming live on WBSM.com and the WBSM app. Call 508-996-0500. Send us app chat messages and open line voicemails using the WBSM app. Now, Brian Thomas.
Greetings and welcome. Hump day, middle of the week, I guess hump night. Now that it's nice and dark outside, welcome to Brian's Beat. The original show born at the apex of freedom, entrepreneurship, and nomadism. And on the 19th of November, did you know that it's Equal Opportunity Day? And I think we all want opportunity. Don't want it handed on it. Well, I guess some people do want it handed on a platter. But Equal Opportunity Day, give me a shot at it if I want it, and let me go. National Educational Support Professionals Day. I think as we get into today's program, education support professionals, gonna take a new light as we get into 20, 27, 28, 31. I'm gonna talk about that in just a bit. It's also International Accounting Day and Men's Day. I could have said International Men's Day, but I think if I say International Men's Day or Men's Day, you know what I mean. It's a day for us. Excuse me, not everybody's a man here. Anyway, on this date in 1620, the Mayflower finally made it to Cape Cod. And then it started going up and down the coast, you know, P-Town, Sandwich. And then it got to Plymouth and it saw that little rock. And I can just imagine those guys with those stove hats. They were saying, that's it? 1620, the Mayflower made it to Massachusetts. President Lincoln delivered his famous 47 years ago speech, the Gettysburg Address, 1863. And in 1985, President Reagan and Head Red Gorbachev, they met for the very first time. Tear down that wall. The Brian's Beat quote of the day, I have an everyday religion that works for me. Love yourself first, and everything else falls into line. I have an everyday religion that works for me. Love yourself first, and everything else falls into line. That quote from Lucille Ball. Well, I have been waiting with trepidation, but waiting for this day. And I got to tell you, it sends chills up and down my spine, partly because this is something that I know needs to be done. The other side of me says, I know that there are lots of folks that are scared about this topic, and they try to avoid it like they would the plague. I'm talking about artificial intelligence. And all you have to do is look left, look right, and it's around you. You may not notice it, but it's there. And so we've talked about it a couple of times, you know, basically me and a couple of callers might call in and add their 2 cents, which is a lot more than what I can add. But be that as it may, what I have done over the past couple of weeks, I started looking for different people that I could bring on to Brian's Beat or Freedom Fools to talk about artificial intelligence, where we are today, where we're going to be tomorrow and the next day. And so joining us today, kicking it off on Brian's Beat, is a tech entrepreneur, and he also calls himself a futurist. Should be interesting to find out what that last one really means. But as a tech entrepreneur, I can tell you, Lars Mapstead he's been circulating himself around Silicon Valley, and he sold a company for a sizable chunk of money earlier this decade. Excuse me, not this decade, but this century. Mars, No, it's not Mars. Mars is the other guy. Lars. Lars is his name. There we go. I'm having problems with this button today. Lars Mapstead. Good evening and welcome to Brian's Beat.
Thank you so much. There were so much openings there, and there's so many things going on in this day of your quotes. I thought that was amazing. I really liked the Lucille Ball quote, and I resonated with the kind of bootstrap mentality. I grew up, you know, really poor with no electricity and an outhouse, and I went on to found a number of Silicon Valley companies, which was kind of funny for a guy that grew up with no electricity. But it resonated with my style of bootstrap, pull yourself up by your boots and go out there and make a name for yourself and seize the great opportunity that is American capitalism.
So tech entrepreneur, did you have several companies that you sold or one company and you sold it? How did that part go?
No, I'm definitely a serial entrepreneur. I've probably got about 20 different companies under my belt, many of them successful. Obviously, the biggest company that was a success was Friend Finder Networks, which was a dating websites going back into the 90s and 2000s. And so, but I also I'm a car racer, car enthusiast. So I had a bunch of websites around that, racing and video games and that sort of thing. And then early on in 1993, 94, my first startup was actually a web hosting and site design company. So I've been going at the internet since the very beginning of it all.
And you made money doing that?
You know, very successful for a kid that literally grew up on food stamps and welfare to being very, very successful. So I have a good perspective on what it's like to struggle and make ends meet, and I also have a good idea of what it's like for the government to take all your money from you after you've been successful.
Yeah, I bet. Futurist. How does, tech entrepreneur, I guess for many people, the technology, even though it's been around for, let's say, the mid-1980s, 40 years, the future has been with us for a while. What's your futuristic look when it comes to tech?
Yeah, so I mean, I grew up, watching Battlestar Galactica and Star Trek and all those kind of things, and it just got my mind kind of wandering and daydreaming about what things might be, and that served me really well, especially in the dawn of the internet. We used to have these modems, and you'd have to wait for the pictures to show up on your screen. And I remember telling everybody at some point the internet's going to have live video. And everybody is going to be able to watch whatever they want on live video whenever they want it. And everybody thought I was crazy at the time. But, now we have obviously YouTube and video everywhere, right?
Yeah. Well, I saw you on YouTube, so I know it exists. It definitely is there. So I've got you on the program today to talk about, and by the way, did you hear about NVIDIA reports? Are you invested in them?
I am invested in them. I actually got into NVIDIA in 2017, mainly because I do video games, but also because at that time, that's how everybody was mining cryptocurrency and Bitcoin. And so I thought, oh, I will buy the shovels, just like in the gold rush, and the shovels is NVIDIA. And so I've literally had that, ever since. And my cost basis on NVIDIA right now is $3 a share.
I guess you know what you're doing. That's why I have you on the show today. And speaking of that and leading into all that you've done, certainly from the tech side of the street, what made you get into artificial intelligence?
Well, I think it's just a natural progression of where we're going, right? I mean, it's like the internet and all the information. Remember when the internet started out, it was supposed to be this free flow of information. And really, artificial intelligence is just another layer of that, a super layer of that, where all the information is available to you at any given moment on any given subject at a level that you couldn't hire the best teacher to teach you about, just a decade ago, right? So that's all available to you right now.
But you're looking at it from a different perspective than most of us. A lot of us are scared of it. You certainly are not. I'm going to ride the wave because it's here. I don't see it leaving any. In fact, I see it overtaking quite a few things, maybe even this job that I have right here. But in saying that, most people are frightened. Should they be?
Yeah. No, I don't think so. I think, in fact, the danger of AI isn't AI itself. The danger of AI is that we end up falling behind in America and in other countries eat our lunch. I think we need to really lean into this. Look, remember the Y2K, and everybody was afraid that the planes were going to be falling out of the sky because the computers weren't programmed properly, and you know the end of the world was going to come, and people were prepping and storing food for you know the end of days and Y2K, and it came and went, and really nothing happened, right? And so I think there's a lot of I understand why people would be fearful. We've got Terminator movies and Skynet and all these things that you know let your mind wander to the bad things, but there is a lot of really good, you know, benefits of AI. And I think as long as we use it wisely, and we probably don't even know all the uses of it right now, just because like when the internet came around, you know, the first 5 or 6 years before 2000, most people weren't into the internet. They didn't really know what it was. They thought people that were using it were kind of nerdy, and you know. But now everyone has a cell phone in their pocket, completely connected to the internet, and we all use it every day, and no one even bats an eye. And so within less than 5 years, I imagine most people would be using AI in some form or another pretty much every day as part of their daily life, and we won't even bat an eye about it.
It's interesting to hear you say that. I'm in my late 60s, and I'm wondering, the baby boomers, later baby boomers, do you think that we're really going to be getting into it that much?
Yeah, well, we still won't be able to program the clock on the VCR, but we will definitely be able to use AI on our phones. Look, I mean, if you think about it, just less than 20 years ago, we didn't have smartphones, and now literally everyone's using them. My mom, who's you know almost 80 years old, she uses a smartphone and the internet every day. So the one good thing about humans is that while we do fear change, we're really good at adapting to new things when they're presented to us. That's kind of the evolution of humans, right? That's what's really great about us is that we can adapt so quickly. And to the point where we don't even realize, like the next generation of kids, you know, they've grown up with cell phones, they've grown up with the internet, they don't know any difference. And the generation of kids being born right now are being born into an AI world, and they're not going to know a world that doesn't have robots going around and AI embedded into, you know, pretty much every aspect of their life, a day-to-day living.
Look, I'm listening, and I certainly see it, but I think that there are many people that are listening right now that they don't see it. They're not that they are oblivious. I guess that side of ignorant that says they don't see it or don't study it or anything like that.
Yeah, I mean, the thing is AI can be very conversational, so it's going to be, you know, a lot of people are going to be using it in a conversational method, so they're going to just be talking to their phone, and their phone's going to be giving them answers, and they're not really going to think that they're using AI. They're just asking the phone questions, and the phone's giving them answers. But in fact, they'll be using AI, you know, all the time. As an example, one of the ways that I used AI this year is I like to garden, and I took pictures of every plant in my garden and asked it, what kind of fertilizer do I need? How much water does it need? You know, and I had the best garden I've ever had in my entire life. And that was all due to AI being able to quickly look at the plants in my pictures and tell me what I had and what I needed to do to make them the best plants that there was. So that's a very practical use of AI that I think people are going to embrace and use all the time.
We're talking to Lars Matsted, tech entrepreneur, futurist, and a person who is heavily into artificial intelligence, or you're just kind of dabbling in it?
No, I'm definitely, I've taken my my winnings from my companies that I've sold, and I've reinvested that sort of as a venture capitalist in all kinds of robotics and AI companies. And, you know, there's a lot of opportunity now for people to get into, you know, private equity, private companies. So I'm invested in a bunch of like robot companies like Aptronics and Figure AI. And obviously I have a big stake in Tesla because I feel like robotics tied with AI is really where we're going. So, I mean, AI right now is mostly contained to your computer and to your phone. But within the next year or two, we're going to have robots that have AI built into them, and they're going to be, you know, in our stores and in our homes, and that's going to become quite a normal thing before the end of this decade.
I'm listening to you say that, and I'm sure others are, and they don't see it. I talk a lot about education on my shows, and I had a school committee member to be on the program on Saturday, and he finds it hard to believe that artificial intelligence is going to be able to take over for teachers in the classroom. What say you?
Well, interestingly enough, just today, OpenAI, which is the ChatGPT company, introduced a whole new AI specifically tailored toward schools. And it allows for them to make really good pre-built lesson plans, automated quizzes, worksheet generation. It has tools for lesson plans and different learning speeds and all that kind of stuff. So AI is moving forward, whether, you know, people are ready for it or not. And, you know, it's going to take a little bit of time for people to embrace that. But look, this is going to reduce the time that teachers spend on all the administrative stuff that they do and all the grading and all that kind of stuff. It's all going to be done by AI, and it'll free up in the short period for teachers to really do what, you know, they do best, which is teaching. And as we get robots into the classrooms, into the schools, those robot AIs are going to be helping as basically like tutors and helping with setting up, you know, if you're in a chemistry lab or something like that, they're going to be setting up the stuff that needs to be set up. And, you know, these tutor robot teachers will also be in people's homes because we're all going to have robots in our houses. They're going to be pretty much ubiquitous. If you own a car, within 5 years or so, most people will have one of these robots in their houses, washing their dishes, vacuuming, and watching their elderly parents and watching their children and helping with their kids' education.
Well, if that's the case, I'm sorry. There's a lot there. There's a lot to unpack.
Yeah.
getting back into the educational part, if, as a friend of ours has stated, Larry Sharp, that AI is a great tutor, maybe not a teacher. The tutor actually does teach the specifics. Why are we going to need so many teachers? And I add to that the fact that teachers are good people, don't want to badmouth them or anything like that, but they need days off. They need health care, you know, the whole ball of wax.
Yep.
They are, next to transportation, they are the largest part of a school budget.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that, we're already seeing, remember, out of COVID, a lot of people took their kids out of school and started doing homeschooling. And there's a lot more people pushing for school choice and for, you know, alternative methods of education to the current system. And I guarantee you there is already a group of people who are teaching their kids and using AI to teach their kids because there is already these companies offering these products. And those kids who are learning already from AI are accelerating beyond what the students are in the schools. And they're going to be a lot more prepared for the AI of the future, right? Because they're already going to be using it every day. They're going to understand it better. It's not going to be foreign or scary to them. And when they get out in the workforce, and when they have to interact with AI, those are the people that are going to have a leg up. And so I think that a lot of people are going to opt for education in their homes, especially people who don't want, we have this sort of indoctrination that goes on in schools. Because you have teachers that have their own belief system and they bring that to the table. Well, a lot of parents don't necessarily want their kids to be taught something different than what they're taught at home. And the good thing about AI and robots in the home is that those robots will have the same belief system and the same moral compass as the parents do.
Is that something that you program? You know what? Hold that thought and remind me, because I might forget. There's been a caller waiting and I didn't open up the phone lines. You will take some calls, right?
Sure, absolutely.
508-996-0500. That's how you get onto the program today. Hello, you're on with our guest, Lars Mapstead.
Yeah, good evening, Brian. Good evening. And your name, sir?
Lars Mapstead.
It's a pleasure for you coming on. I have listened to different interviews, experts, if I may just touch on some of the points. One individual that's in AI, I don't remember the names, but he says AI is the machine and instrument made by man. It's only as good as the quality of information in AI is only as good as the quality of information going in, and that at some point AI is going to plateau. It's going to flatline. It's not infinite intelligence, and that's what people think. They think the AI is an all-knowing machine that's going to answer all your problems. And another.
Let Lars answer. We'll get to your next one.
Okay. Sure.
Yeah, no, that's absolutely correct. And the thing is we've already sort of hit that point where we're hitting the limits of all the known information that humans have put out. So what they've done is they've created synthetic environments for the AI to learn new information basically off of itself. But you're right. The current state is that it's only as good as the information that we put into it.
It's a tool. Another thing is, have you heard of the term called AI dystopia or AI syndrome? You ever hear that terminology?
Yeah, absolutely. So there's kind of two thoughts on where we're going with AI. One is the dystopian AI, where it's sort of like a Terminator and Skynet. And then there's another group of people that are saying that we are going to have a utopian society where AI is going to bring about this age of abundance. Where it's going to lower the cost of energy through new technologies. It's going to allow us to work a lot less because it's going to be taking on a lot of these things. And so I actually am sort of on the side of the utopian outcome, but I feel like we're going to have a period of transition where, you know, where we are fearful and we're trying to figure out how to use this tool. But I believe that as we figure out how to use the tool and it becomes more ubiquitous in our lives, all Americans' lives, standard of living is going to go up dramatically due to AI.
Really? So we were talking about teachers. Don't you see a drastic shift? I mean, these school budgets are astronomical. And time and again, we've got a governor here in Massachusetts, you're in California, I should note, who is letting local community boards increase taxes because the state's crying poverty. I don't think they're broke. They've got enough of my tax dollars, but be that as it may. But the bottom line is when you have school districts spending hundreds of millions of dollars and the people in their community are having a hard enough time trying to make ends meet, something's got to give.
Yeah, I absolutely agree. And I think, you know, for me, I've looked at education quite a bit. And I think that the place where we are losing the grip on spending, you know, nobody believes that our tax dollars are spent wisely or efficiently. And in education, I think that is mostly on the administrative side, that we have way too many administrators and we have way too much bureaucracy. And the beautiful thing about AI is that it is able to take over a lot of kind of middle management or managerial tasks. That's what it's really good at. It's good at knowing that people are doing their job and how much of their job they're doing and what resources they need to do it. So I think that AI is going to help schools get more efficient and reduce the spending without creating higher taxes. So I think that the faster we get AI embedded in our schools, the better off we're going to be as far as not having to pay as much taxes and being more efficient in our school systems.
Don't you believe that? And we've seen it since COVID more and more. I predicted about 15% of families will leave the government operated schools. We're about 6-7% right now. But don't you see that number climbing as more and more people go out and get this robot that I believe you stated costs about $20,000?
Yeah, they're talking about that's what they're going to try to get it down to. Obviously, the first iteration of these robots are going to be more, but they're looking at $20,000 Rosie the robot, you know, in your house that's going to, you know, basically do all your laundry and take care of all your chores and that sort of thing. So I do see a lot more families are going to be opting to have their kids educated at home. You know, there's a lot of busy work at school, and in many ways, you talk to teachers these days, and they'll tell you that they feel like that they're more babysitters than they are teachers, right? And so the AI robot fixes a lot of that, because obviously the AI robot can watch your kids personally a lot better than one teacher can watch 30 or 40 kids at a time.
508-996-0500. Thank you. You're on with our guest, Lars Mapstead. Hello.
Hello.
Yes.
Hello, can you hear me?
We hear you well.
Yes, I'm calling from the Boston area. My name is Maurice. What guarantees to your guest, if these robots, if you will, are teaching our children, how accurate are they in terms of filtering in true history? I mean, in terms of things like mathematics and other things that they will be tutoring them, fine. But I mean, history, it has been, we're still kind of catching up to like history from like literally maybe 100 years ago. How do we know that these children will be accurately well versed, not only to communicate, but know the histories of not just America, but other countries as well? How do we know they won't be a bias, in other words?
Yeah, absolutely.
Great question.
And so, yeah, that is a great question. And I kind of, just like you have your own firewall in your router at home where your personal computer is protected from the outside world, your robot that's going to be in your home is going to run off of a personal AI that's going to be in your home. So it's not going to be necessarily biased by the outside world. And you're going to be able to look over what your kids are being taught in a way that you could never do right now in schools. And so if you see something that is being taught that you don't like or that you think is wrong, you can literally go in there and tell it that, you know, this is wrong and challenge it on the thing. But of course there's going to be bias, but Lord knows we have bias in the schools right now because people, you know, teachers teach whatever they feel like essentially. So I feel like these are actually going to be better at keeping things, you know, to the way that the parents want their children to be directed. I think it's going to be a lot better. Parents should have a choice over what their kids learn and how they learn it. And we shouldn't be relying on the government to, you know, indoctrinate our kids in the way that it wants our children to learn.
I will agree with you on that, that we should not have too much governmental interference. But we have to make sure of two things. A, that there's a baseline of learning that all children are, like, you know, meeting a certain requirement of. And then that is not even speaking of the social aspects. If you're actually being interactively taught or communicated to through a device or machine, you are less likely to communicate with another human being other than the people that are only in your house. So does that stunt your growth in terms of your social interaction?
Yeah, so I think that what's going to end, you know, the thing is we only really need about 3 hours-ish of education a day. The rest of it is just transferring between classes and driving to school and lunchtime and all that kind of stuff. So there's going to be a lot more time for students to be able to interact. And I still see, even if you have your student at home, your student's going to want to play baseball and football and be on the, you know, the drama club or whatever it is. So I think that we're still going to have a lot of social interaction. And if you look at kids who are homeschooled right now, and it's a huge growing area, those kids are not the kids of, you know, 30 years ago where they didn't have a lot of interaction. They have a lot of social interaction. There's whole groups of students who are homeschooled that get together with each other because of this exact issue, right? And so they're still getting a lot of people time and a lot of emotional support and that sort of thing. So it's not just going to be kids all by themselves in their house forever.
Thank you for your call. I do appreciate it. Lars Mapstead is our guest. Let's hear from you. Hello. Thank you.
Yeah, good evening, gentlemen. So going back to the education, mathematics, just say something simple like multiplication,
yep.
Where we see that grade school achievement tests have been dropping steadily over several decades. What I'm kind of wondering is, how do you motivate the children to learn this tedious mind skill of multiplication and division when it's available in the ether? Why bother learning something when artificial intelligence can just solve it for me? That's my question.
Two great questions there. So essentially, the AI, because it's going to be teaching children one-on-one, it's going to be able to tailor the teaching style specifically to the student. So if your student has dyslexia, the teacher is going to know that and is going to be able to teach directly to that. If your student is really excelling, it will excel with the student. And the beautiful thing is let's say your student loves dinosaurs. So the AI can literally teach in everything in dinosaurs. So they'll make all the multiplication about dinosaurs. They'll make it in a more interesting in a way that no regular teacher could, because they couldn't spend the time with each individual student to tailor the whole lesson plan specifically to that student and what they love and their learning style, because every student has a different speed and a different learning style. And that's what makes this AI education so powerful, is that it can really tailor it to each specific student, and that student will learn better and be more engaged because it'll be about them and what their interests are, instead of just kind of the whatever the average is of the 30 or 40 kids that are in the classes.
Interesting. I'm not sure it'll motivate a 10-year-old. It may. I mean, it certainly what's happening now doesn't seem to be that successful, especially with the lack of the home support. I'm not sure. Maybe AI could take over for disinterested parents. Well,
you know, I'm glad you went down that road, Lars.
Yes.
There is this disconnect. Is it what's happening in the home that makes the kid bad in school, or what happens in school that makes the kid bad on the outside?
Well, I don't think you can make a blanket statement for everybody in America about that. I think there's obviously good parents, and there's parents that, you know, are doing the best they can but are struggling because, you know, they have to work two jobs or whatever it is. And then there's just parents that are, you know, disassociated, right? And those kids suffer for sure. And you know, the kids that have a better home life, you know, have an easier time of it. To be fair, so I don't think that it's any one thing. I do believe that, you know, we have good teachers, we also have bad teachers. We have good parents, we have bad parents. And so, but I think that AI, you know, pretty much what you're going to get from it every time, right? And so it becomes much more reliable as an input. You know that it's going to give you the very best education that's available today, or the very best output that's available today, over, you know, what might be mediocre output from, you know, from somebody else.
So I brought that up because rarely, and I'm sure it happens, but rarely do I hear parents say, well, it's the school that is made my son or daughter bad. However, within the teachers union, you constantly hear the problem is what happens at home and the kids bring it into school.
Mm-hmm.
So that's why I brought that up.
I don't disagree that happens, but I don't know that it's ubiquitous across, you know, everything. I think it's I think it's very individualistic, and that, you know, there are some kids that have a tougher time than others, and parents, sure, and all that kind of stuff.
I would agree. So in trying to break this down in the little time that we have left, and I do appreciate you extending your time with us to talk to the callers tonight, I have to wonder, are teachers going to get caught up in this if AI can do all that you're saying, and I believe that it can. Obviously, this Alpha school that's based out of Austin, Texas, although they're very expensive, it seems to prove the fact that kids can learn in 2 hours a day just doing artificial intelligence. And I believe the track record was first graduating class, 11 out of 12 kids went on to college. So I guess that's not bad if that's what they want to do. But yep. What is going to happen? What's going to be the role of the classroom teacher? And how many of these classroom teachers are going to end up like a coal miner out of a job?
Yeah, I think in the long term, it's very interesting for teachers and whether they still have a job or not. I don't know exactly what that time frame is, but in the near term, I see AI being embedded in the schools, helping the teachers perform better, and so I think that, you know, teachers could be replaced by AI robots in the future completely. And we might, you know, turn all schools into places where we just have performances and sports and, you know, social interaction. So I definitely see that as a good possibility. But in the near term, it's going to be enhancing the teachers, just like I said, with lesson plans and automated quizzes and a lot of things that take up a lot of teachers' time right now. And then the teacher can spend more time focusing on actually teaching the children.
I get it, but I guess here's I don't know if it's a problem. If you can do the lesson work in 2 or 3 hours, why am I getting on a bus, going to school, sitting there, going through, you know, I raise my hand to go to the bathroom, have to eat at that cafeteria food, all that, and then go home. I'm exhausted at the end of all that.
Yeah, absolutely. And so I think the answer to that is that just like in COVID, because I've talked to a number of teachers, you know, when we had COVID, and I said, well, some, you know, this seems great. The kids are all online. They're learning. Why did they ever need to go back to school? And a bunch of the teachers, you know, basically said that it works great for some kids that are, can adapt easily to technology. But for kids that can't easily adapt to technology, it doesn't work for, and those kids will get left behind. And so I think that there's still going to be, like I said, every student is different and they have different teaching needs. I think there will still be, you know, some need for teachers to be physically with students. And one thing that AI can't give to students necessarily that teachers can is empathy and the human, the human responsibility and the human emotions. I think those things are actually important. Like, we don't want to all just be robots, right? We want to have that stuff in there too. And so there may be a time where teachers spend more time, or a new kind of job comes about where the teachers are teaching children how to interact socially and be better citizens and be better caretakers and stewards of what we have in here in America.
So there's another classification that I want to get into, and that is people that drive, whether it's Lyft or Uber, cab drivers, bus drivers. So, you know, we're talking about school. What's the future for drivers with these robots? And as a joke, I was saying to my woman friend earlier today, I wonder if these robots are going to have to go to the Department of Motor Vehicles in order to get a license.
Yeah, well, this is where my futurist hat comes on. About 11 years ago, I made a post on Facebook that said, within 10 years, we'll have robot cars that can drive us around. And I was off by about a year. But now, you know, you can buy a Tesla, and the full self-driving, if you haven't, you know, driven one of these or one of the Waymos, these things are driving you around, and they don't have a driver, and they work really good. And in fact, the latest studies have shown that they get in far fewer accidents than human drivers do. So it's safer to have the robot drive you around now. And I think people are starting to experience that. So driving positions in America is one of the largest employers, and those jobs are going away. Now, there will still be people that want to have, pay premium to have a human drive them. But right now, the robot taxis that are coming out are about half the cost of a human person. And so, you know, when people are struggling to make ends meet right now with all the inflation that we have and, you know, living paycheck to paycheck, if they have to take an Uber, they're going to choose to take the one that's half price.
Yeah.
And so, you know, capitalism is going to work its magic there. And those drivers are going to have to go out and find different jobs. And it's not just that. It's across the board. Pretty much every profession in America right now, if you think your job is secure, just Google the name of your job and robot on YouTube, and you'll likely find a YouTube video of a robot doing your job today.
Well, you bring up a good point, because we've got kids graduating high school, kids graduating college, and a lot of people don't know what they want to do, and that's when folks used to go into the military. But now, I'm sure there are still some folks that want to go into the military, but most people don't. How do you try to gauge yourself or train yourself to get into a profession that isn't going to go by the wayside, or at least not for a good 15, 20 years?
Yeah, I think that the thing that people should be doing right now is that, like I said, there's this transition period where, you know, we're going from, drivers to robots. We're going from teachers to robots. But it's not going to happen all, you know, overnight. And the people who are trained in artificial intelligence and trained in robotics and trained in this future tech stuff, those people are going to have a leg up when it comes to getting a job, when it comes, you know, getting the best paying jobs in the future. So I think that if I was in high school right now, I would be learning about how to use AI. And it's really not, I'm not talking about the super scientist kind of stuff. I'm talking about just how to use ChatGPT or how to use Grok to get information that you need. There's a lot of companies right now that they are all in the same boat. They don't know how to use AI. They're not really sure. And if you learn how to use AI, you can be a consultant to all these big Fortune 500 companies and teach them how to, you know, make their companies work better and more efficiently. And you're going to be in demand for at least another 10 or 15 years. And then by then, I think we'll have figured out what society looks like after AI has embedded itself in pretty much everything that we do. And look, this is coming no matter what. There's no putting this genie back in the bottle. And so we can all put our head in the sand and pray and wish that it didn't exist. I guess sort of like the internet. If you were a fax machine seller back in the day, you could sort of see the writing on the wall, right?
Right.
And you're no longer in business. But does that mean that the fax machine guy didn't go out and get a different job doing something else? Like, we'll find new things to do. I can't tell you what those are going to be exactly right now, but we'll find new things to do that will occupy our time and put food on the table.
Lars Mapstedt, thank you so much for coming on to the program today. I'll talk to you soon.
My pleasure. Thank you.
All right. Lars Mapstedt, tech entrepreneur, futurist, heavily invested. Yeah, I got to tell you, it sounds promising and yet scary.
That within 10 years, most public education will be non-existent.
This is WBSM.
The best part of waking up is Folgers in your cup.
People ask all the time, who the heck is low-cost airlines? Well, we're not just one airline. When you're talking to us, you're talking to everyone. We are the discount supermarket for all airline tickets. Plus, we have all the airlines and always have the best prices. American, Delta, United, plus all the specialized international airlines and a lot more. and we make it easy. We guarantee you'll talk to a live human in 60 seconds. You can have the rates you need and have your trip booked in 5 minutes. Now, how cool is that? And remember, when you're talking to us, it's like talking to every single airline available with one fast phone call. All you need to do is call and find the best prices to fly wherever it is you want to go. So are you ready? Call Low Cost Airlines right now. 800-221-6085. 800-221-6085. 800-221-6085. That's 800-221-6085.
Back to Brian's Beat.
That's teachers, administrative staff, you know, boards of directors, all that kind of stuff. I think that just goes...
Yeah, I think we're going to see a lot of change in transportation and in education, just to name a few. It still scares me, but I think what I'm going to do is I'm going to, on a weekly basis, try to present more and more about this so-called new technology, which to me is an extension of the computers that came out in the 1980s and maybe even those old mainframes. I don't know what, but we'll try to do more of these. 35 in Little Compton, 34 in Mattapan, and 34 in New Bedford.
That with inside 10 years, most public education will be non-existent.
WBSM. Call 508-996-0500. Back to Brian's Beat.
Actual teaching of students is like a 3 to 4 hour max a day kind of yeah. situation. All the rest of it is just like running around, transportation, you know, changing classes, break times, yep. and all that kind of stuff. And at home, you just don't need that. So the kids are going to be way less like stressed out and burnt out.
To change something, you must build a new model that makes the existing model obsolete.
And that new model might be known as artificial intelligence. I've always liked the idea of having a robot. I never thought about the robot as a teacher of the kids. I did think about, you know, you're my wingman, so to speak, or wing